I want to tell you about a podcast you should check out. It's called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Urtube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs. The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. As a parent myself of a child who's had an IEP since kindergarten and he's now a 10th grader, I know how confusing, overwhelming, frustrating, sometimes daunting the whole process can be. I checked out an episode of Understood Explains called The Difference Between IEPs and 504 Plans. And what I love about it is how easily Juliana explains everything. She answers common questions that probably every parent or caregiver has. She dispels myths and is concise and to the point. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. And there's a direct link in the show notes if you need it. This is Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast, episode number 146, with guest Joe Casey.
This is the Your Kick-Ass Life Podcast with Andrea Owen, a no BS guide to self-help and badassery. Because ladies, let's face it, life's too short for it to not kick ass. And here's your host, the girl who serves it up straight with a side of crazy, Andrea Owen.
Hey there, ass kickers. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am so glad that you are here. And we have a reoccurring guest today. My dear friend, Joe Casey, is here. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about Joe in just a minute here. But I'm so excited that it's the middle of April because spring, obviously, has been here for a few weeks. And I love it when the weather gets warmer. I'm sure those of you who live in a really cold climate are really happy that maybe the snow is gone. And also, my birthday is on Saturday. My birthday is on tax day. Anybody else have a tax day birthday? The last few years, this is like true confession time. The last few years, I have not loved my birthday. I think it was like probably around the time I turned 38 and I was like, oh my God. When did this happen? Like, when did this happen? And I know I'm a life coach. I'm supposed to be like aging gracefully, whatever the hell that is, and telling you like, oh, but it's when you get older, all the wisdom that comes with getting older. And of course, I think all of those things. Of course, I don't want to go back to being 21. No, I don't. But things are changing over here. I need to get somebody on the podcast who is an expert in that, an expert in the whole concept of aging gracefully and like, how do we do that? Because please don't send in a Q&A about how to do that. Because I'm going to be like, I don't know. If anybody knows, let me know. But I know logically, again, please don't send me a bunch of emails where you tell me that, oh, but I love my 40s and 50s because I'm so much wiser. And I totally agree with that. Like, I am with you on that. That's the part I love. I love being more wise and more resilient. Hell yes. I don't think that there's any way that I could have known the lessons that I know now and had that in my 20s or even really in my 30s. So 42, you guys, I'm going to be 42, which I know is still really young. It still is really young, but it's just kind of like, I feel like I've hit that point in my life where I'm like, okay, this is happening. This is starting to happen. And yeah, who's with me on that? Also, registration is now open for the 30-day experience. And this is one of my signature programs. I do not know if I am going to teach this again in 2018. I am making changes to the offerings over here based on the fact that I have another book coming out. And this very well might be the last time I teach this class, especially at this price point. This class is perfect for anyone who, like, raise your hand if you compare yourself to other women and feel like you just don't measure up. You feel like who you are as a woman is just never enough. And maybe you have chronic patterns and habits around perfectionism, numbing out, hiding out and isolating, maybe a little people pleasing / approval seeking,
wanting to control everything and maybe a little bit of self-sabotage, maybe all of those things. And it's all you know. That's what you do. It's like part of your to-do list. And maybe you're not really proud of how you're showing up in the world, but you have no idea how to change it. And plus, you can't remember a time when you actually took care of yourself and took time to do what you love. I mean, like, what is that, right? This class is about that. And it's not just a place where we sit around and talk about the problem. You already know what that is. But this class is about giving you new awareness around your negative self-talk and any feelings of unworthiness. Because you've been operating the same way for a long time, possibly decades. What the 30-day experience will show you is a new way of not only how to speak to yourself with more kindness and self-compassion, but when you do the work, you'll be amazed at how much better you feel, how relieved you are, and you'll have hope that there's actually a new way of being. Another part that I love about this class is, and this is actually how we kick it off, is the recognition of your deep core beliefs and how they are dictating your thoughts, behaviors, feelings, and decisions. Because we can help you all day long on figuring out how to change the voice of your inner critic. But what's underneath that, what's actually the problem at the core of it, are these deep-seated beliefs that you have about yourself. And a lot of times, we don't even know what they are because they are kind of like these subconscious beliefs. So what the experience will do is teach you how to challenge those beliefs, create new ones, and recognize when you're falling back into them, because that is really the birthplace of confidence. That is the birthplace of courage. And then another thing that I love about this class, and this is really the basis of my next book, is you will have a deep understanding of what your default behaviors are. So all those ones that I mentioned, the perfectionism, the control, the hiding out, the numbing, really all of the behaviors that at the end of the day make you feel like shit, that's what we're going to dive into. And you will have a deep understanding of them so that you can choose new behaviors that serve your best self, that are more in alignment with who you want to be, and so you can be proud of who you are. And then also, this class, there is a private Facebook group in it. There's a huge sense of community in there. And there is really something magical and powerful that happens when a group of women come together to better themselves and to support one another. You'll be a part of that group. And also, when the 30 days is up, you'll get an invitation to my alumni group, where I am in there once a month doing live videos, answering your questions. So when it's over, it's not really over. You get invited to the alumni group. If you have been in the 7-day challenge, which was last week, you have heard all about this class. So you know where to go to find out the information and to sign up for it if you haven't already. And if you did not do the 7-day courage challenge, fear not. It is not a prerequisite for this class. You can go to 30dayexperience.com to read more about it and to sign up. And that's 30, it's the numbers, 30dayexperience.com. There's a link to it in the show notes. And there are some pretty awesome bonuses in there and a price break that is only available for a limited amount of time. So I would love to see you there. This is usually my biggest group and the most active group, because there are just always amazing kick-ass women in there helping each other and who are hungry and ready for change, who are hungry and ready to change their patterns, to change their habits. And I'd love to help you and support you. So hopefully I'll see you over there. All right, so moving on to Jo Casey. I'm going to go ahead and let you read her professional, her super, super posh professional bio over on the show notes, because Jo is a personal friend of mine. I adore her. Jo has been coaching for over 15 years now, and she says she's clocked over 1,000 hours of coaching experience. So she's just really great. I hope you love this topic that we are talking about. Jo wasn't one of those planned out people. Like, I usually plan out my guests way ahead of time, and it really was, you'll hear about it in the episode. I'm excited for you to hear it, but she did something in her business, and I was like, I called her and I'm like, you have to come and be on the podcast again. We have to talk about this. So I'm really excited for you to hear this conversation. And so without further ado, here is Jo. Hi, Jo Casey. Thanks for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me back.
Back for a second time, the second time around. That was a popular song here in the 70s in the US. I don't know if you know it. I take it you don't because you didn't start singing with me.
I don't know that one. We did have popular music, though, in the 70s, even over here in England, but not that one. No, we did.
Not
yeah.
that one. No. Okay. Well, I'm excited to have you on. And this was sort of an impromptu episode. You and I were having some deep conversations last week. And I said, I need to record this conversation and have you on the podcast now. I pulled the trigger because I have introduced to my audience over the last, well, several weeks ago that this podcast is shifting a little bit. And I'm going to talk about, I always talk about shit that matters, but I'm going to kind of talk about different shit that matters. And this is what this is about. And I think it matters a whole lot. And just a little bit of background of how you and I know each other. If people are avid listeners of the podcast, you and I did an episode. It's been a couple of years, believe it or not.
I know.
When you and I taught a class together for coaches. Mm-hmm. And it was called Get Your Ass Off the Ground. Such a great name.
Mm-hmm. It was genius.
I think it was in 2014. I think it was long ago. I do. I'd have to check, but I know it's been maybe 2015. I know it's been a while. And you and I, we had a conversation about just the coaching industry in general and what it takes to make it. And you work with life coaches, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's not what we're going to be talking about today. We're not going to be talking about the coaching industry per se as far as strategy. But I think that what you are talking about on your website and going forward is a conversation that does not just pertain to coaches. It pertains to every woman, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So people are like, what is she talking about? All right. So what I'm going to do first to kind of kick us off is I'm just going to read what, right when you land on the homepage of your website, joekesey.com, like when you told me the new website was out and I went to it, I was like, oh my God, I love it. And I ran and told you, but it says, a good business requires visibility. It needs you to take up space, get seen, and be heard. Being a good woman, in quotes, requires the exact opposite. And therein lies the tension. And again, I think that like when I read that, I was so enamored by it and just had like this visceral reaction because I think you could even substitute the sentence, a good business requires visibility. Mm-hmm. Like to live a great life requires visibility.
Yeah.
You need to be seen and take up space. And so then you go on and you talk a lot on your website about the feminine conditioning. So let's start there. What does that mean?
So to me, feminine conditioning is all of the messages that have been poured into us since we were tiny little girls about what is acceptable to be as a girl and as a woman. And this applies even if you had really progressive parents who told you that they loved you every day or told you that you could do anything that you wanted, who didn't, you know, necessarily raise you like a 1950s stereotype of, you know, you need to be a housewife, you know. Even if you were given progressive feminist style messages from your family of origin, our culture gives us so many messages about what it means to be a good, as in acceptable woman, and for men too. You know, there's a lot of toxic masculinity out there as well. So our feminine conditioning is almost like the soup that we absorb. I think that's a bad analogy, but you know.
No, I totally get it. Like, yeah, you're in the crock
pot. Yeah, as we're evolving and it gets in our way, it gets in our brain. And a lot of the time it's operating on a level that we're not even aware of until we violate it, until we try and step out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, I know somewhere on your site, you kind of gave some examples about what we are taught. And it's not like someone hands us this pamphlet that has all the rules, but it's these messages of like, we want you to be, you should speak your mind, but not too much. You know, don't step on anybody's toes. You know, embrace your sexuality, but don't be slutty. And it's all these kind of paradoxes. And really, I think what it comes down to is the feeling of that we just can't win.
It's impossible. We are given this recipe of perfection that is impossible to achieve.
Mm-hmm. It's the whole damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this creates this real tension when, you know, we bump up against it. So, you know, when you want to speak out in the meeting, when you want to tell your partner that you don't like something, mm-hmm. when you want to, you know, start sharing an opinion that maybe you've never shared before, what happens is we can't quite often get to the point where we are doing those things. All of this internal stuff kicks in that says to us, no, don't do that. No, stay quiet. No, what people might get upset if you say that. What will mm-hmm. they think? Yeah. You know, will they like me? Will I hurt their feelings? All of that stuff kind of starts to kick in, because that's our kind of protective instincts, self-protection instincts kicking in. And so when you're wanting to grow a business, or when you're wanting to grow yourself, or like you say, just have a good life, stand up for yourself, to do something a bit outside these accepted norms, there can be this real kind of internal kickback. And that's before we even get to the societal kickback right. that happens.
Right. Through the yeah. internal first. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. It's interesting. When I have a really, really good friend. She was my best friend for a long, long time. We met when we were 14 or 15, and then have actually kind of rekindled our friendship, and we talk a lot now. And she told me recently, she said, you know, when you first started your blog, what, like maybe it's been 10 years now, she said, I was a little worried and was kind of like, what is she doing? Why is she mm-hmm. out there telling everyone about her personal life? And she's like, I thought you should stop. She's like, I was judging you. And she said, it really was about my own stuff. You know, like, yeah. like I wasn't so much like worried what people were going to do or say, but it was my own discomfort in you shining so brightly, even though I was talking about, you know, the harder stuff in life. But I think that I was so glad to hear her say that. And I was like, that's the conversation that we need to be having. And yeah. it was really interesting, because that was, even though she didn't say it to me, but that was some kickback. That was some societal kickback that I was getting. And trust me, there were people who said and commented and said I should shut up. And I do. I think it is other people's stuff, but I do think it's still really hard to just take that in and be like, well, I'm going to keep going anyway. Because again, it's that it's a matter of unlearning what we know of decades of this, what you call feminine conditioning.
Yeah.
There's definitely been times in my life where my paycheck ran out before I got paid again, and I wish I could have accessed my next paycheck a few days before I was due to get it. Well, what if I told you that can happen with Earnin? Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. You can use Earnin for anything you need to, therapy visits, rent, or even extra self-help books. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine and join Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, when I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind. Download Earnin today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Noise under podcast when you sign up. It really helps the show. Noise under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC. Trying to find the perfect gift for someone special in your life, maybe for Mother's Day, but feeling overwhelmed? Finding a unique gift that they'll love, that's personal and that they won't already have, can be the ultimate challenge. That's why I'm so excited I've discovered Songfinch. It's an amazing, thoughtful gift, and it's easy and fun to make. Songfinch lets you create an original radio-quality song inspired by your own life and the people you love. It's completely unique, personal, and lasts forever. I had Songfinch make me a song about my dad, which was a gift to myself. This was such a personal song for me, and I was a little skeptical the artist could capture the emotion I wanted. But during the process, they have you share some personal details about your relationship with the person you're creating the song for. Then a Songfinch musician of your choice, you get to pick based on samples they have, will write, record, and produce your original song in just 4 to 7 days. I love my song so much. I was so emotional when I listened to it. I had no changes. It's perfect. Whether your song is for Father's Day, an upcoming graduation, wedding, or anniversary, or even just a gift to show your loved one how much you care, start your song now to lock in one of Songfinch's top artists. For a limited time, Songfinch is letting our listeners upload their song to Spotify for free, so you and the lucky person you gift it to can listen to it anywhere, anytime. Go to songfinch.com/noise and start your song. After you purchase, you'll be prompted to add Spotify streaming for your original song for free, a $50 value. Again, my URL is songfinch.com/noise. Don't forget to share your song with us too. songfinch.com/noise.
And not to put too fine a point in it, because it's important to be aware that this isn't just internally what goes on for us, because then we have a culture where we have some very strong examples of what happens to women when they do properly violate that feminine conditioning. So it kind of works on these two levels. There's the internal stuff that goes on, but then within our culture, we've talked about this, you know, a number of times. We can think of those women who are the rule breakers who are then vilified. And I think that is really intensified over the past year or two with, you know, we have professional trolls now who part of their kind of raison d'etre is to target openly feminist or high profile women. So look at what happened to Leslie Jones. Look at, you know, the actress from Saturday Night Live, who was in the all-female Ghostbusters. They made a film of Ghostbusters with women in, and that was seen to be so outrageous that this woman was not just bombarded with kind of mean messages on Twitter, but they doxed her, they tried to shut down her website, it was hacked, there were pictures, intimate pictures of her stolen. It was horrible. Scary. It was really scary. And so it's almost like we only need a few very public examples. It's almost like the Scarlet Letter.
Yeah.
You know, we only need a few very public examples of that for the rest of us to kind of go, well, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be in that position. I think a lot of what we talk in the kind of coaching space is the internal stuff that comes on, but there's a definite cultural thing that goes on as well. And I think it's important. This isn't just all in our heads.
Yes. And I think, and I'm glad you brought it up too. I think that this does happen on the men's side as well. You know, like any kind of revolutionary will be vilified, you know, the Martin Luther Kings of the world, et cetera. But I think even if you look way back in history about the Witches of Salem, you know, like they were drowned and burned at the stake, and there are so many instances of history where these women were murdered for speaking out and for doing and just social justice stuff too. And even look at people like Madonna. I think Madonna is a great example of someone who in the 80s, and maybe it's poignant to me because that's when I grew up. I was a little girl when she was just becoming famous, and she was so ahead of her time. And I remember, like, I think even though maybe it was a little bit too overtly sexual for my age, I think that is secondary to the fact that I want my daughter to have heroes like Madonna, who just keep going, you know, who still in the face of being just, like you were saying, just like vilified by the public. And people are afraid of that. I think people are afraid of women who just kick down the doors of these societal and cultural personas that we are supposed to, this box that we're supposed to fit into.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting with Madonna now, because, you know, this is a woman in her 50s who is still an artist, who is still sexual, who still is wearing, I guess, revealing, that sounds a bit prudish to say that, but, you know, those kind of amazing costumes still. And that's what she's now criticized for. Oh, she's too old to be doing that. Yeah.
Have you seen her arms? Like, I'm so tired of hearing about her arms. Shut up. I got ready.
Still being kind of vilified, but the goalposts change, you know?
Exactly.
So now it's like, who made those rules? Who made it? And so I think sometimes we only realize what the rules are when somebody kind of crosses them. And the good thing is then we get to say, is that a rule we want to keep? Really? Is she too old? Really? So, I see. So if you're in your 50s, you can't be sexual. You can't kind of own your sexuality. You can't be an artist. You can't control your own.
Newsflash, women in their 50s still have sex. Our vaginas don't dry up and fall out of our bodies. God, can you imagine, like, people picking them up?
Yeah, just in the supermarket one day. Well, what was that? Oh, I'm so sorry, my vagina.
Excuse me. Can I get that straight by your leg? Thanks. Oh my God. Well, and I know that you and I had a conversation about what happened. And I think that this is sort of like where the whole thing sort of exploded and came to a head, whether you lived here in the United States or you didn't. You know, I know that you're over there on the other side. But yeah. I think when Hillary Clinton ran for office here, and this, you know, regardless if you liked her or not, it doesn't matter. I think, you know, because I was over here feeling the burn, but I just watching the debates and watching how she just was torn apart for so many different reasons, not just because of the emails, but for so many different reasons about the way she was dressing and all of these things.
Or whether she smiled or didn't smile, or whether her voice was whiny.
And
or
her cough. Yeah. And yeah, and like all of these things. But I think that just, and even for women who had never really paid attention to any of what we're talking about, or feminism in general, or women's rights, or anything, I think that when she lost, it meant so much more than just her losing the election. I think for me, and I think the reason that there was so much grief around it, it felt like for every woman who's been passed up for a job by a man who is less qualified, for any woman who has been, I might start crying, but for any woman who has been made fun of or not taken seriously, you know, and it's like, I think it was the collective groan from all of us.
Yeah, and it wasn't like it was subtle. You notice it wasn't like, oh, he was a pretty good guy. And there was, he was so unqualified. He was so vile to her. I mean, I stayed up and watched the second debate. I mean, and I'm in the UK. It like started at something like 2 a.m. But I don't know if people remember, but he pulled this stunt a couple of hours beforehand where it was the week of Pussygate, which in any sane world, you would think, well, that's him dead in the water. You know, that's it. But he was keeping going. And he'd done this thing where he'd gathered, I think, some women who'd accused Bill Clinton of sexual assault, almost to say, well, I may have done it, but, you know, her husband did it as well.
Right. Well, that's exactly the message that was. Yeah.
This is insane. Mm-hmm. And so I watched the second debate, and I think so many women around the world, because it really wasn't just the US that women were watching this kind of going, he is like every abuser we've ever met. He is like every horrible boss, every guy who told us we were worthless. I mean, the bit where he says, such a nasty woman.
That was... I was in California. I was with my friend, that same friend I was just telling you about. And she was like, did he just say she's a nasty woman? We both were like, what? Yes. And just the gaslighting too, I think. You know, what's interesting is I came out of that whole thing really realizing, I was like, oh, my entire first marriage was about gaslighting. I didn't realize it until that whole thing. I was like, that's what that was. Oh, yeah, it was gaslighting. Okay. Yeah. It was, I think that it was sort of a rude awakening to what. It was just grief, I think, on so many levels. And it had so much more to do with just, you know, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. I think it represented a lot of things for a lot of women, which brings us back to this conversation. And so I'd love to talk to you about, where do we start to unravel this? And I think that for so many people, it can feel like so impossible. Like, how are we even going to take this down? What are your thoughts on that? Where do we start?
I think the first thing is we've got to be aware of it. And we've got to know that this isn't, it's really easy to start thinking, what is wrong with me?
Yeah.
And so one of the first things that I really want people to know is it's not your fault. It's not any one individual's fault. And by the way, this isn't also about, you know, there's some Illuminati there going, well, what should we be telling women this week? You know, this is just how our culture has evolved. And the good news is we get to start reshaping that culture, but we can't do it unless we're aware of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because unless we're aware of it, we can't then start to question, well, do you know, is it not okay for me to take up space in the world? Is it really a bad thing if I disagree with someone publicly? Is it really a bad thing to tell that guy that actually he's wrong? And we can start to kind of look at it in the light and start to look at those beliefs and say, actually, are those, and those assumptions that kind of go along with this idea of what's a good woman, and kind of say, actually, is that what we want? And we can start to reshape them, but we can't do it unless we're aware of it.
Absolutely. And I think even just that, I always say this in personal development, like the very first step and half of the battle is being aware of it in the moment. And I think that this is no exception. And it may even be a great exercise for people to do, whether you're thinking about it in your car or you love journaling and writing it down. What have you made up that being a good woman looks like? And this is not probably a question that you have like answered on a worksheet before. I mean, this is something that is in your subconscious that is swirling around, whether you have ever thought about it or articulated it ever in your life. So I would ask that question, like, what do you think a good woman is? And I think also it really is about these small moments in our everyday lives that matter. So for instance, I was traveling, wasn't actually that long ago, it was in the last 6 months or a year or so. I was on the airplane and I don't even remember which seat I was in, if I was in the middle or the aisle or the end. I think I may have actually been in the middle, and there was two men next to me. And of course, you know, not, I shouldn't say of course, because not all men do this. Hashtag not all men. But like, one of them was man spreading and the other one had like totally overtaken the armrest. And I totally didn't realize I was doing it, but I had completely like pulled myself in small, crossed my legs, and was just like trying to be as small as possible, as to not take up too much space, as to not make other people uncomfortable. And I was thinking about it, you know, and I think I noticed it because I noticed the man's arm was actually, I took a picture of it. It was actually coming over into my space, and I was kind of irritated. And then that's when I realized, like, look at my body posture, like look at what I am tolerating right now. And actually almost inviting by doing this. And I thought to myself, I wonder if I would have behaved the same way if it was two women that were next to me and one was like spreading and the other one was like, I probably wouldn't have, my body posturing would have been, who knows? It may have been the same. I don't know. But I think it was a really good lesson for me to just change the way that I was sitting. So I was like, okay, you know what? This is not comfortable for me. So I am going to basically wrestle my arm over. The guy was sleeping. So in his defense, he had fallen asleep. And I think that's why his arm had come over. So we did kind of wake him up a little bit. And then he moved his arm back over to his side. So it's just little things like that. Notice where you're doing that. Notice where you're apologizing for bumping into someone, you know, and man or woman, where you are saying that you're sorry for just like existing, just existing.
Yes. Yeah. Although I say that as a British person, and we apologize. We struggle to say a sentence without an apology in it.
Well, isn't like, because I have some Canadian clients and we joke about it. Because isn't your I'm sorry kind of equivalent to like an excuse me?
Yes, it basically. Yeah. I'm sorry. Could you?
But still.
But no, you're absolutely right. And it's this, where are you holding yourself back? Because we can take up space physically, but also we can take up space kind of in the conversation. We can take up space in the, you know, in the culture. Where are you dimming your light to, you know, because of somewhere along the line, we've been told that, well, if you shine too bright, that will make other people feel bad.
It will make other people feel too bad, and you don't want to be seen. I think for me, in the subconscious, my biggest fear is to be seen as a know-it-all.
Oh, who do you think you are?
Yeah, who do you think you are? Because I remember when I was a little girl, I'll never forget this conversation. I was probably 10-ish, and I was playing with some of my friends on, you know, on the street that we lived on. And we were talking about another one of our friends, because that's sometimes what we do. I'm not going to sit here pretend we never talked about. And they were talking about this other, I don't even remember what the name of her was. And she was saying, I think it was like, I was listening to this conversation, and one girl said to the other one, she's such a show off. And the other one said, like, I know, she's such a know-it-all. I remember that conversation. They weren't even talking about me, but I remember that stuck with me, because I was like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that girl that they're talking about that's a know-it-all and a show off. And I don't even really think that the girl, from what I remember, like, she wasn't annoying. She wasn't. She was just a little girl who probably loved to have fun. And, you know, and we were little kids, and it was already starting. And so it's those messages that we get that stick with us. And just by my personality, like, I am a take up space type of person, but there's been so many times where I have held back and not said anything for fear of being talked about.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
And I think it shows up a lot with women in perfectionism as well. So we're not going to do something unless we know it's going to be perfect. And because it's never going to be perfect, then we tend to not do something. And that can be putting something out in the world. That could be saying, you know, especially now, one of the conversations that we really need to have culturally is, you know, about white supremacy. And as a white person, I am hugely uncomfortable because I'm going to mess that up. That's a given. I don't know what it's like to be a person of color. And so if I do start engaging in that conversation, then I'm going to mess it up. Yeah. Do you know, I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to feel clumsy. But we really need to be having those conversations. And, you know, that feeling of I can't say anything. I can't come out with my opinion. I can't ask a question. I can't create something in the world unless it's going to be perfect. Uh-huh. Holds so many of us back. And there's power in getting comfortable with your imperfection. You know, Brené Brown says the gifts of imperfection, but the fact is we aren't going to grow unless we allow ourselves to acknowledge that we're not going to be perfect. And that is okay. Mm-hmm. We have many, many, many examples of imperfect men who are still doing their thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. And that's a whole nother conversation. I think too that in regards to whether it's politics or social justice issues and things that, you know, we want change around, I think, and I'm making this up, but because it's also my experience, is that the reason many of us don't say anything and yes. Or if we see or if we hear people having a conversation that we don't agree with and we want to speak up, but we don't, I think that perfectionism comes in. And what it looks like is that we're afraid that somebody's going to argue back with us and they're going to have research or statistics or better rebuttals, and we're going to be stuck and not know how to argue back. So we don't say anything. And yeah. I know I've been in that situation before where, you know, you don't have a comeback. And so you're just like, shut up. You know?
Yeah. I've always said I was an activist for quite a while and was quite involved in kind of politics at quite a local level, but I was invited to see if I wanted to apply and kind of get on the program to, you know, maybe working towards becoming an elected official. And I realized that I just couldn't possibly because I would get so flustered and then I would just lose it. And then I would just call the other person, you know, you just shut up. You're just a dick. I would just... And I thought, no.
Maybe not. Well, do you regret that? No. Do you think that's in the cards for you?
No. I think there are some amazing activists and politicians out there. That is not my path.
I just want to make sure.
Yeah, not for me.
I have to ask those questions.
I mean, I'll still continue to be an activist, but yeah, not kind of.
Not at that level. Okay, gotcha. No. So speaking of activism in this whole topic, what is your why? Why did you get so involved in this and why do you keep at it?
I know we kind of talked about this last week when we were having our conversation, but it comes down to the fact that I kind of want to save my mum. Mm-hmm. Or I want to save the little girl that I was when my mum was kind of my age. And so my mum was working class, was, you know, told that her career options were be a secretary, and if you were really bright, you could be a teacher, but only until you got married and had kids. And then that, it was the norm that you gave it up. And my mum did that. She became a secretary, and then because she was bright, because she was very gifted, she got on a social work program and she became a social worker. And then she had me and my brother, and she got quite depressed. She wasn't happy being a stay-at-home mother. And so when I was just turned four, she went back to work, and she faced a huge amount of pressure and criticism, overt criticism. And this was the 70s. You know, it was as far outside, you know, not nearly as normal and familiar to have kind of career women. It was really, you know, a derogatory term quite often. And she put herself under so much pressure to get everything right. You know, she still did the vast majority of the housework. She did the caring for us. She worked full time, and she was strung out and overwhelmed most of the time. And that's one of the most vivid memories from my childhood, is my mum just being, you know, quite often on a hair trigger, because, you know, not that she was violent or anything like that, she was just so stressed, you know, yourself when you're at that point where you just, I am on my last nerve. And she was like that for a long time, because she wanted to be so good at her job, and she was so gifted, and she wanted to be such a good mom, and she also wanted to do all of those other things that were still expected of her, like, you know, keep a clean house, mm-hmm. like, you know, make sure all the bills were paid. And it wasn't that my dad was, you know, a male chauvinist or anything. He was really supportive of her, but, you know, it just wasn't the done thing for, you know, him to do housework and stuff like that. So I just remember her being exhausted and overwhelmed all the time. And yeah. As I got older, in my 20s, I found that I was repeating the same patterns. And that's how I got into personal development, because I had a little mini breakdown when I was in my mid-20s, and kind of thought, I have to understand this, so I have to kind of break this pattern, so I have to do things differently. And when I bring it back to why do I do my work, I do it because I want to rescue my mom from mm-hmm. all of those years of feeling so down on herself and so overwhelmed and so exhausted and so unperfect. Mm-hmm. And like she was failing every day. I want to save other women from going through that.
Wow. That's such a great story. And I mean, great and not great. But I love that you were honest enough to say, you know, like, that's really at the bottom of it, what it's all about. And I remember when you shared that story with me last week, is that I realized a huge part of my why is about my mom too. And my mom mm-hmm. was, her feminine conditioning was, they grew up very strict Catholic, and her feminine conditioning was, you get married and you have babies and you stay home and you live a good life and you obey your husband, and that's what it's all about. And so she married her childhood sweetheart when she was 17 and dropped out of school, because, you know, why do you need to graduate from high school if you're married and you're going to have babies? Mm-hmm. So she dropped out. I think she finished 10th grade, and had my brother at 17, had my sister at 20. And her husband turned out to be not so great, without getting into too many details about that, and left them. And my mom had to do it all on her own, never paid a lick of child support to her. And she had these two little kids. Mm-hmm. And luckily, my mom has seven sisters, and they all still lived. And this wasn't like in some, you know, podunk town somewhere. This was in Los Angeles. So she just, my mom's always been very outspoken, but the same conditioning really that I got, you know, was like, just don't, not too loud, not too much. And so to me, it's just, it's fucking appalling that she had to do that by herself. And yes, she did have help, because she had my aunts, and without them, I don't know what she would have done. I don't know how she would have survived. And she barely did, from what I understand. You know, they lived with my aunts from time to time, and just so she could make it with these two little kids. And just, it blows my mind. And I've asked her too, and I'm like, do you ever want to go back and get, you know, your GED? And she's, you know, sometimes she's interested and sometimes she's not. But I just, for me, I think a lot of what has fueled my fire is, I don't know. I think that, you know, if some psychoanalyst heard this story, they'd be like, well, what are you trying to prove? And I think that so many of us deep down have something that we're trying to prove. And I think that sometimes it's okay. I think as long as it's not our primary fuel, like really, mm-hmm. I do this work for women, you know, but I think there's still like you were saying, it's like, there's still that little girl in me who wants to prove to my mom, like, look, you know, you can go to college and you can do all these things and you can use your, what do I want to call it? Loud voice. You can use your natural outspokenness for good. And that's what I try to do every day. And I think we all have, like a deep seated why, and I think it can be helpful to kind of unpack it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Oh, let's sit around and talk about our moms. Well, I do kind of shifting gears a little bit. And I know your new website with all, and I want everyone to stop what they're doing and go to joecasey.com. And I know, because you were, well, this is my question, because you weren't exactly like, hey, world, I have all this new messaging and copy on my website. Go read it. Were you a little freaked out?
Oh my God, I was so freaked out. It seems kind of funny now because it's been out in the world for a week or so now, but in the run up to it, because I got to a point where, and I know we said we weren't going to talk about the coaching industry, but just very briefly, I got to a point where financially I was doing pretty well, but my message just felt so shallow. You know,
Which part of it did you not like? Because I think that's important.
Well, I guess the fact that I wasn't talking about the kind of the depth of the work. So I was talking about things like to build a coaching practice, you need to do these things. I was talking about strategy and I was saying, oh, well, you know, you also need to be able to deal with some of the emotional stuff that comes up. But actually the theme that was coming up time and time again through my own work and work with my clients and my peers and was this fear of being visible and putting things out there and fear of judgment and all of that. And it was some working with, you know, my own coach who kind of was able to pull all these threads together. And I went, oh, it's all feminine conditioning. That's kind of, this is the thing that we need to start unpacking. And then I thought, well, I need to start talking about this. And my second thought was, oh my God, I'm burning down my business. I'm not going to have a business at the end. Nobody's going to want to listen to this. And so I did the ugly cry more times than I care to imagine. I have woken up in the middle of the night with fears around, have I put this out? And I kind of out myself as a feminist, then will people still want to hire me? Mm-hmm. Will I start taking, you know, will I start getting lots of criticism and lots of
hate mail or death threats? Yeah.
Yes. And all of that stuff. And had this urge to kind of go, but I still really like men and all of that, you know, all of those things. Seriously, I considered putting an FAQ on my page going, no, I don't hate men.
So you burn your bras. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like lipstick. And
oh my gosh.
So no, it wasn't easy. And what was, and I obviously, because I'm a coach, I'm fairly self-aware. There was one part of me, which was kind of meta going, well, this is really interesting. You're going through exactly the same type of resistance.
Yes.
But yeah, it wasn't easy at all. You know, it really wasn't. And the ironic thing is now that so many people have got in touch with me going, oh my God, that's so you.
Yeah.
That has been there all along. And yet I felt that I had to hide it and keep it hidden. So I love the fact that people are responding to it so well, that people are recognizing it. You know, when people see that term feminine conditioning and see the kind of description, go, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Now there's a name for it. Yes, I agree with everything you said that, you know, I don't work with coaches so much anymore, but it really, really is for so many of them. Not all of them. I have had a handful of them who really that's not an issue for them and they've worked through it. They've already done the work. But for so many coaches, and I've talked about this so many times on my podcast, but when my book came out in 2013, it was, and at that point I had done a fair amount of work on myself. And so I thought, you know, okay, good. You know, I've worked on this whole inner critic thing. I've worked on, you know, trying to sort of diffuse what other people think of me and I have the tools and I use them. And then my book came out and I was sort of like flung out into like massive visibility, like more than I had ever, because it had been kind of like incremental at that point, like just a gradual driveway type of gain. And then all of a sudden it was like this huge, just, oh my God, catapult. And I freaked out. I was like, get me out of here. I mean, even at my book signing, Amy Smith, my best friend, like laughs about it and tells the story because she was there. And she, who has done a lot of work on the feminine conditioning, if there ever is anybody, she was more excited about my book signing than I was. She was like manning the table and I was like wanting to hide under it. And I was so, even my friend Michael was like, what was, he texted me later. He's like, what was going on with you? And I was like, that was the most uncomfortable experience of my entire life. And it was just a combination of just nerves. And there was some excitement. Like there was a lot of excitement. Mm. I'm not going to say that there wasn't, but a lot of it had to do with this whole topic that we're talking about of just the core beliefs in my brain and in my tissues that are telling me, run. People don't want to see you here. Like this, all of those things, like, oh, even just talking about it, like makes my stomach hurt. But yeah, just all that to say, all of us, I think, well, I should say like 98% of us are still doing this work, even if we already have things like online businesses or speaking careers, or you have climbed the corporate ladder and you're in a C-level position in your job or any of these things, it still can rear its ugly head.
Absolutely. I mean, a friend of mine who doesn't have a business, works a day job, but she's on the PTA and she's been wrestling with this whole thing about, I really want to be able to make these points. But whenever I, you know, I'm struggling to kind of open my mouth and find a space for me to say things. So I think it comes up in so many areas of our lives, even if you don't have a business.
Yes. I have one more question for you and then we're going to wrap it up. Okay. So what is your biggest hope for this messaging?
I hope that more women start to realize that it's normal. It's not something wrong with them, which is because we get into this double bind, I think. We kind of go, I really want to do this thing. Is it safe for me to do this thing? And oh God, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do this thing? Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and so we like get this double jeopardy. So I would like to at the very least, relieve people of the burden of that second one. There's nothing wrong with you because you're struggling with this. This is part of our collective experience as women. Mm-hmm. And so what I want to start doing is, well, let's collectively start having a conversation about that and start to unpack some of it and start to collectively rise and overcome it.
Yeah.
Because if ever there was a time that women needed to take up more space and share our opinions, it's now.
Yes. Fist pump. I love that. I just want to add to that to just kind of underscore what you said is that, because I thought about, you know, this conversation ahead of time and I thought like, I don't want it to be just like, let's record a conversation between you and I just like complaining about the patriarchy and things like that. And I don't think that that's what it's about. I think, yes, first and foremost, it's a conversation on what that actually is, what it looks like, what our human experience is for people that may not even realize that they're in it. And I also think that the benefit of having these conversations is just that. That we're having the conversation and that it needs to be had. And the more that it happens, the more we can dissipate any shame around it. Or like you were saying, you know, feelings of, is there something wrong with me? And, and that I think it's a courageous conversation. And I always say courage breeds confidence. And that's part of what this is about. So thank you so much for having the courage to do what you do in the world with women and with coaches and for coming on here and having this conversation. And thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. It really has.
Awesome. Thank you everyone for listening. Anything that we talked about is in the show notes as always. So go to joecasey.com to read more about Joe. And until next time, I will see you all out in cyberspace. Bye-bye. Hey, Ass Kickers, you know what would help me out so much? If you left a rating and review for this podcast. Your Kick-Ass Life podcast will always be free to you, and to help me get more awesome guests and to spread the word, it helps tremendously if you leave a rating and a review. Now, they don't particularly make this super easy to do, so I'll help you out a little. If you're in iTunes and you're on your phone, when you are in the podcast app, you need to search for Your Kick-Ass Life podcast. I know, even if you're subscribed, this this is how you do it. So when you search for it and you see it come up, click on the cover art. Then towards the top where it says reviews, click that, scroll down a tiny little bit, and then click write a review. Stitcher is a bit easier if you're on Android. The easiest way I found to do this is to type into Google stitcher.com your kickass life, and voila, my podcast should pop up as the first link. Scroll down and click write a review. That's it. Thank you so very much. You have no idea how much it helps me when you do that. All right. I'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Are you overwhelmed by the things that get in the way of you doing what you want to do? Are you looking for ways to simplify life to better align with your values? Do you want to create space in your schedule so you have room for more of the good stuff? Play, joy, relationships, gratitude, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, I invite you to check out Edit Your Life, a podcast to help you edit the unnecessary from your life so you have more room to enjoy the awesome. Through episodes with me, Christine Coe, and a range of super smart, compassionate, and thoughtful guests, you'll come away with big picture insights and practical ways to declutter your home, schedule, and mental space without getting bogged down by perfection. I have always believed that small moments and actions matter tremendously. My goal is to help you find agency and space in your life through doable baby steps that will leave you feeling accomplished instead of overwhelmed. Check out Edit Your Life wherever you enjoy your podcasts.